It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative. We're here with Chloe Halpin. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Awesome. Glad we could finally do this. I know we scheduled this like it seemed like forever ago, but we had to fill up those January dates somehow. So
yeah.
But thanks for hopping on. So I guess before we get into anything really, I know obviously 2026 just kicked off. Just let us know what you're up to, like maybe shows, if you're recording anything. Like, what are you up to?
So I'm actually announcing tomorrow on my social media on the tomorrow's the 7th, January 7th, that I'm going back to Nashville next week, hopefully to record, but definitely to play some rounds. I'm going to be joining my friend's band on Broadway Wednesday night. They're called John Hibbard and the Haybirds, and they play every Wednesday the closing shift at Bootleggers Inn, and some Fridays too. I joined them on a Friday back in November. And I'm going to join them again next Wednesday. I'm just playing acoustic guitar in the band. People message me and they're like, what's your band name when you play down there? It's his band, John Hibbard and the Haybirds. I'm just playing guitar. He lets me sing a few, so it's definitely worth it to come and check it out. They're awesome. He's in my band too. He's my bass player, actually. We call him our, what about my dad? Hillbilly ambassador. He's real into that bluegrass Appalachian sound. He has a song called Appalachian Rocket Fuel about moonshine. I love him. He's just a great guy.
That's awesome. So what are you living in Nashville now, or are you living in New York? Where are you at?
So that's the fun part. When I started touring full-time in 2022, I was living in Nashville, but I gave up my apartment there. It's just so expensive. Anyone that's ever been there will tell you how expensive it is. If you're not living there year-round, every month going to that apartment, it's kind of not worth it to pay for it, at least for me where I am right now.
Yeah.
I'm not a trust fund baby, so I can't, but I wish I could. So I kind of bounce around. My parents still live. Right now I'm in New York and I'm at my parents' house. We live out on Long Island. That's where I grew up. And I gig out here on the island. There's a ton of wineries, breweries, restaurants, and great festivals. And I do those. And then I split my time between New York and Kentucky, which is where you found me at Dickman's.
Dickman's, shout out.
So my sister and I have a house up there in Kentucky, not too far from Dickman's. And I'll stay there usually around half the year. And then that's where I can just drive down to Nashville any day I want. If I can book a round down there, it's like a 4-hour drive. So I can usually do it in 3.5.
Right on. Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, the drive from here to Nashville, it's like, well, yeah, like you said, 4 hours, but the more you do it, you know, you just get used to it. It's kind of thing.
I write some of my best songs on that drive because it's just 4 hours of silence in the car and I'll just come up with ideas, yell them into my phone and some good ones out of that.
Nice. So I was curious, like when you first started playing and writing and everything, like even before Nashville, I guess, can you describe like, I guess the country scene, but really like just the music scene in general from where you're from? Because like I'm very unfamiliar with that part of the country where like Long Island and everything around there. So can you kind of describe like what the country scene might be like around there?
Yeah. So the country scene, I have to give Long Island so much credit. It's just grown like crazy. When I was a kid, when I was a really young kid, we moved to Long Island back. This is where my mom's from. My dad's actually from Kentucky. But when we moved back to Long Island, I was, I believe, 2. And there were no country radio stations on Long Island. There was one that we would get a signal from Connecticut. If the wind blew right, we could get it. And then when I was, I believe in middle school, I don't know, a country station opened, 96.1. They're like the core, the OG Long Island country station. 96.1 started. And then now there's 3 country stations, I believe, total on Long Island. I'm sure there's more, but those are the mainstream ones that I know. 103.9 and 94.5, The Farm, just started. So it's really grown. They started doing big country fests, I believe, when I was like in middle school, high school. And then, yeah, just, it was really funny. It was like, I left for Nashville and I would come back every summer and there would just be more and more country music fans. It really worked out in my favor. Cause I was like, hey, that's what I play. Book me at your restaurants. People are really into it. And a lot of people don't, I think in the majority of, America and I call it the mainland country, they kind of believe, that Long Island's just kind of an extension of Manhattan.
Yeah.
And New York City, it is not even slightly. Once you get past Queens, and this real first stretch of Long Island, Nassau County, they kind of keep that city life going. But once you pass it, that last, like, I want to say 70 mile stretch of Long Island is all farmland. It's all agriculture. Yeah. There's, again, the wineries. There's just so many vineyards out here. But there's farms. There's dairy farms, horse farm. They're all, there's just tons of farms. Corn, I don't know. They grow so much stuff here. So I think that agricultural life really kind of accepted the country music scene as it was growing. And then our tourism life has just shot up. So with that, like, I remember when I was younger, we saw a sign. We were driving out to the beach on the North Fork, and we saw a sign that was like, come pet our dairy cows. And then there was a number next to it because they were charging money to come and see dairy cows, because they can. It's Long Island. We got people from the city who've probably never seen a cow before. And my dad, being from Northern Kentucky, his mind was blown because he grew up on a farm, and he was like, we could charge people to see cows.
That's awesome. That's funny. Yeah. It, like, I mean, I could definitely, me, like, I'm from, also from Northern Kentucky, and like, I've never even, like, I think New York City, period. Yeah. And then obviously as time goes on, you're like, wait, it's more than New York City. It's kind of crazy. Yeah. But that's awesome, especially to hear that, like, the boom that country has had in your area. And I'd like to talk a bit also about like back when you, like, first went to Nashville. I love asking people about this, because to me, it sounds like moving anywhere. I've moved places, you know, far and wide many times, and it's always such a huge step for me. And I'm curious how that was for you. Like, I know you say you bounce back and forth, but, like, do you remember, like, how you felt when you first, like, took that step to move, like, that distance and, like, new people, new place, that whole thing?
I felt great. I remember being like 6 or 7 and telling my parents, I'm going to move to Nashville. I'm going to be a country singer. I'm going to do music. As soon as I saw Taylor Swift, I have to bring her into every interview. Just it was seeing Taylor Swift perform at the CMAs, bam, I was like, I'm moving to Nashville. So I actually, the way that I was able to move so swiftly after high school was that I got accepted to Belmont University for their songwriting program. So I have a degree in songwriting. I call it the Billy Joel or Taylor Swift degree, because those are the two biggest songwriters in my life. But It was a great segue, moving there for college and kind of having that little community of Belmont's campus, and then growing from that. Belmont's campus is right on Music Row 2, especially for the songwriting majors. We took classes down there. So it was a really great way to acclimate to a new city that I'd never lived in before, and actually living in a city, because, again, I don't live in a city here. But it was really interesting. I would say the biggest, like, culture shock for me was when I first moved there. It was still a small enough town. They don't do this anymore. But after 11 p.m., the traffic lights would blink yellow and red, because there was not enough traffic. And I remember going on a walk one night with a guy, and I was like, what's happening? Is, like, the apocalypse going to start? And he was like, no, this is so normal. And I was like, not where I'm from. But that was, like, one of the biggest things. But it was just, it was fun. It was freedom. And again, it was college, so it was just a nice segue into it. And I loved living there. It definitely, it has its ups and downs. I'm going to credit that, because I know there's a lot of people that live there and they struggle with it because it's so oversaturated, some say. But it is such an amazing place. I don't write songs like I do when I'm in Nashville. So I'm really excited to go back.
Awesome. Yeah. Like, the oversaturation thing, like, that's a point that, like, and it's, like, to nobody's fault. I mean, everyone wants to go there, and everyone wants to write, everyone wants to, you know, grow as an artist. It's just, I feel like it's so hard to avoid that. And like the community aspect of Nashville, I know a lot more of, like, the Texas, Oklahoma stuff. So, and I'm, like, even, I'm not like I'm not based in Nashville, but Rage Rowdy is. So I go down there, like, you know, pretty often, and, like, I'm still myself getting used to that whole culture. And like, it is crazy. It's like, everyone knows each other. You could go to a bar, like, in Midtown, go to a bar in anywhere. And, like, people are networking. People are, like, they know each other. And can you kind of describe the culture and the community maybe that you surround yourself with when you're down there?
Oh, yeah. So I always do say, when I was in college, I was really bad at networking. I was so, I just let my anxiety get the best of me. But as soon as I graduated, I met really great people. One guy, I'll credit him every time, Justin Love. He found me at Around. He broke me out of my shell. He was like, you want to do this, you got to network, you got to meet people. And he really showed me the ropes on how to do that, like personally taking me to the events and showing me what he does. But it's just such a great community. And I think, like you said, it has a lot to do with who you surround yourself with. So and like you just said, going to bars, I'll go. My favorite places to go are D's Lounge, Skinny Dennis, now that they're open down there, Brown's Diner, and then the Greenlight Bar, which is around. I'm playing around there next Friday. Mm. But I feel like those are places where I can go in anytime, any like night of the week, any month, and I'll probably run into someone that I know, but I'm also going to meet someone that maybe I've been wanting to meet, or that I meet them and I'm like, oh, I need to know you, and this is really important. And we can connect. And I've gotten better about making sure I have business cards on me every time I go out. but no, it's just, it's like any industry, you know, people are really friendly and they're going to have their opinions about you, but your opinion about you is what matters most. So just going into it confidently is all you can really do.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a, like a special place, you know, like, I mean, I'll go even like with me just doing this bull crap, you know, like I'll go down there and like I'll run into someone that I interviewed like a year ago.
Yeah.
And they come right up to me. I'm like, oh shit, I never thought I'd meet you in person.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But kind of stepping away from that a bit, I'd like to talk about your sound and your style with your music. I guess first and foremost, like how would you describe the sound you have, the style, your music in general?
I need to think of a new way to phrase this. Because this is the, I always word it this way and then I like read it back or hear it back and I'm like, that sounds so cheesy, but it's so true. I like to say that my sound is if Taylor Swift and Avril Lavigne had a little song baby, because that's what those two, when I was in middle school, that was all I listened to. It was just ingrained in me. But I do have, like, my dad being from Northern Kentucky, we have Appalachian roots. So I love bluegrass. And I do go back to that a lot. I love the acoustic sound. Acoustic guitar is the base of all of my songwriting. Even if I write a song on piano, I will very quickly switch it back over to guitar so I can play it at shows live. And I don't write a lot on piano. I'm not very good at it. But I definitely think it's very acoustic guitar driven, but it's storytelling. And I don't even always like to say that it's country because it's just singer-songwriter. But it definitely has that edge that I don't like to say, like, it's an edge that Taylor doesn't have, or it's an edge that Avril Lavigne doesn't have, or an edge that someone, it's just an edge that I have. It's my own personal oomph that I put in there.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I was listening to your stuff today and I was like, I was having a hard time trying to say it too, but like that makes perfect sense because like definitely the Appalachian like kind of sound for sure you could hear in there, but you do have like the like Taylor Swift makes a lot of sense because it does have that like pop melody here and there. Like,
yeah,
it has, like,
I like catchy melodies.
Yeah,
they get your attention.
Yeah, and it works. Like, it's a really cool, you know, soup at the end of it, like of just so much different things. And and especially in today's world with music, like you don't have to be one certain genre. Like look around you. Like everyone's playing everything else, and I'm wondering, like, if you see that in your world as an artist, is it like do you see that very present? Like people aren't really like following the typical, obviously in terms of marketing and stuff and all that, like getting on a playlist, you know, that's a different story. Like this is a country playlist, this is a pop playlist, but do you see that maybe in your creative drive, like when you sit down to write or when you like might write with other people too, or anything like that? Like there's not, like, we don't have that like rule of like sticking ourselves in a box. Like we could do whatever we want.
Absolutely. And it's great that you brought up like even co-writing. I had a co-write a few months ago where I went in the room and I said, I want it to sound country. And I was with these two guys where I was like, I know we can get that modern little bro country sound going on, and it worked and it was awesome. But usually when I go into a write, I don't bring a genre into it. I'm typically writing with other people who do fall towards the country genre as well, and that storytelling, so it kind of flows that way anyway. But we never really announce like, hey, we're gonna write a pop song today, or we're gonna write a country song. I like to just let it flow and see where the song takes you. I really don't like to overthink it too much. There's a great quote that I heard through. I had a mentor for a while. Her name is Kim McLean. She's an incredible songwriter, and she used to write with Loretta Lynn before she passed. She actually went on a whole book tour of the book that she wrote with Loretta. But when she was my mentor, she was still writing with Loretta, and Loretta would tell her, just sing it how you'd say it. A song is a conversation. Just yep. sing it how you'd say it. And that's like the biggest thing. No genre, no specific sound do I try to bring into a room. I bring into the room. We're just going to sing it how we'd say it. Like, if this is our big idea of we're breaking up, how would you say that you want to break up to that person? And figure out how to make it rhyme. That's the hardest part.
Yeah. And it seems like you have a pretty laid back vibe then when it comes to writing, and it like, you know, very simple in a way of say it how you want to say it. Or,
yeah.
And like, it's, and I always want, I've been wondering this a lot lately with artists when they write, is like, do you know when a song is done? Do you know when you're like, all right, this is it? I feel like that's like a lot of people might think they're doing too much. They might think they're doing too little. How do you like wrestle with that in your brain? Because that seems like the toughest thing ever.
That is so hard. I really don't know. I don't know if a song is ever done. I have songs that I released years and years ago, and I'll go back and listen to them, and I'm like, what if I said it that way? Or what if this chord changed? I always think there's room for growth and changes in your sound. But I think when you can, especially as a singer-songwriter and someone who plays my own songs out, I think when you can play it confidently at a show and you can see that people are resonating with it, that's when you know you've done your work. You don't need to overthink anything else. And I'm a really big believer in having other people's job be the mixing and the mastering and not putting that all on me, because that's where I have ADHD. As somebody with the songwriter brain and ADHD, I could spend 7 hours just on one sound in Pro Tools and changing it up and being like, but is it perfect enough? I don't need to worry about that. Somebody else that's a professional in that world can take that job. I will tell you if I like it or not at the end, but I'm confident in making sure that the song resonates with the people I'm singing it to.
Right, right. And like when you make connections, like I feel like I don't know the feeling of it being an artist when you make connections with fans, like a lot of the times who you never met before. And like that, it's kind of a broad question, but like, do you, like, what's that feeling like? Like, it has to be something hard to explain, I would think.
It is really weird. I still struggle with like the, I want everyone to be my friend too. So I still struggle with like, okay, if they're coming to your shows and they're your fan, you don't need to be their best friend and like get too personal. But there's definitely like professional boundaries there. But it is really weird. Like I have a video my sister took of the first time I ever signed one of my own CDs. I was playing the farmer's market up here on Long Island at West Hampton Beach. And even that moment, I still think about it all the time. And I'm like, that doesn't feel real. I've signed hundreds of CDs since then. But that first one I think about and I'm like, that didn't happen. That never kicked off the rest of them, but it did. It happened. I don't know. I don't know if the feeling ever becomes normal of like having a fan and seeing that connection. But I will say, especially in the winter months when the gigging slows down and there's not as many shows, they are absolutely what keep me going. Like, not to be like, oh, I never believed big artists when they're like, I'm doing it for the fans. But oh my gosh, I'm doing it for the fans, because there are some days where it gets really hard. And you're like, if I'm just down here in the studio all day, kind of alone creating content, people can see me on Instagram and be like, oh, she looks like she's having fun. But I'm alone in a basement studio. Can't really eat at your mental health. And just one little comment from somebody who's been watching my videos consistently saying, hey, great job. Keep it up. Okay, I'll keep it up if you say so.
Yeah.
Like they really do make so much of a difference. And I don't like it personally when artists of like my level, like the up and coming, will say things like, it doesn't matter what you post. No one's listening. No, people are listening. Mm-hmm. If you've got something and you have followers like that, people are listening to almost everything you do. And it's a little weird to think about, but it is cool. Like, I've written enough music that people enjoy that they want to look at my Instagram or my TikTok all night long and keep up with me. What's she posting? What's she doing? Oh, she's going to the gym. Now she's doing this. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, but no, like that, I was actually about to ask about that kind of like the how today in the music industry, like creating content to put on socials, TikToks, everything like that's it's a big thing now. But no, I was saying, cause like, you're one of those artists who like does keep up with it. I think it's like a new post every day from you, but like, that is like, it's hard to argue that that's kind of what it takes nowadays. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's exceptions, but like I love bringing it up on every interview because either people are like, you know, I don't like it that much. So most people don't like it.
Yeah. I've learned that most people don't. And I'm always like, oh man, because I do and I don't. I get why they don't. I saw a meme the other day that was a picture of Kurt Cobain, and it was like, imagine explaining to him that he has to feed an algorithm. And I get that. That's like, yeah, that's not what our brains are meant to do. It's like, mm-hmm, sending emails to venues. My friends will make videos where we joke about that. That's not what I'm supposed to do as a songwriter. That is not what my brain is trained to do. But it is something that now in today's world, I have to do. And I try to just roll with the punches, accept it. I'm being way more laid back right now than I have been all week, like truly, or all weekend. I don't know what happened. It's like I took a Xanax. I did not. But like it really can be a lot. Like I said before, if you're sitting in a basement all day just making content. So you said, I do. I try to post something on social media at least once a day. TikTok, everything I saw on my feed last summer was saying post multiple times a day on your TikTok. So these days I'm posting about 5 to 7 TikToks a day.
Mm.
It is eating at my brain. Absolutely eating at my brain. It is comparison all the time. If my video doesn't get enough views in a certain amount of time, it can just be like, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me in my brain back there? So I have to try really hard to fight that. And I find outlets too. I will binge an episode of The Real Housewives because it takes my mind off of all this other stuff on social media. I think posting is very important though.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I try not to fall into that conversation of, oh, it's stupid and we shouldn't have to do this. Because I agree. It is stupid. We shouldn't have to do it. But this is the world that we're in now.
Yep.
So you do. You're going to do it. And it's like I said before with the fans, it's the best way to engage with fans. It's the best way to get encouragement. I'll give you a great example. I posted a cover of Purple Rain by Prince. Mm. Probably shouldn't have, but I posted a cover of Purple Rain by Prince on my TikTok and then on my YouTube. And on my TikTok, I got a comment that wasn't the nicest. It wasn't mean, but it was just kind of like, make it stop. And I was like, oh, okay, you didn't like it. All right. So I went to YouTube and I was like, man, did I not do a good job? Maybe I should take this cover down. And I opened YouTube and there were like 7 comments on YouTube that were like, this is amazing. Your voice is incredible. This is the best cover I've ever heard. And I was like, okay, see, it's all subjective. You just got to give things time. And my boyfriend's really big on always reminding me. He's like, don't read the comments. And I'm like, mm-hmm, I got to, because there's some positive ones.
Yeah.
But you got to give yourself other outlets rather than just social media. And I definitely can see how if somebody were to listen to this podcast and then go on my Instagram or my TikTok, they'll be like, she's lying. She's always posting. It doesn't bother her. It does. It bothers all of us. But there's just – oh, got a phone call. It can eat at you. It's just – it's such a great way to engage with fans. Again, going back to Taylor Swift, she's the mother of all mothers. She had a MySpace account. And that MySpace account was how she engaged with fans. She would message, from what I read, I'm too young for MySpace. Apparently, she would message with fans and post about when she was going to their towns. And it sounds very simple because that's what we all do now on Facebook, is post about our upcoming shows. But if it made a difference for her, maybe it'll make one for me. So,
yeah,
I just think you just take the, like I said, you roll with the punches, you kind of try and figure out where it works for you. If making a reel of a cover song every once a week doesn't work for you, then find something else, a different way to engage with people. I've tried going live on TikTok. That doesn't seem to really work for me, but posting the covers kind of does. So you just got to find your niche in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything you said, 100%. And I could relate to it. I'll pull the curtain back a bit, but like when it comes to like my stuff, like this, like podcast we're doing right now or any of them, like there's clips that we do and put them out, you know, for like, and for content, like we'll collab with the artist. They could put that on there, just clips. And then I'll make some stupid freaking meme about Limp Bizkit, and then it'll get like 10,000 likes. Yep. And then the podcast that I love doing more than making stupid memes and like put more thought into, like it'll get like 9 likes or something. And it, you know, I get what you, that's kind of going on. And then it might flip the other way around the next clip. Like, it's hard not to let it eat at you a bit, but that you're right. That's where we're at today. And
if I post a TikTok relating to the Real Housewives or something with Vanderpump Rules, it'll be like 100,000 views overnight. But if I post a cover, it's like 200 views.
Right. Chloe, let's talk a bit about you were talking about it before. Actually, no. First, we're going to talk about this because it is very new. It's what, the 7th? Like January 7th? No, it's the 6th. So we just got the 2026. Another very bland, broad question, and you kind of hit on what you want to do, your announcement earlier. So what do you have planned? What are some goals, long-term, short-term, whatever, for this year?
I definitely want to get more music out this year. Last year, I released 2 singles. I'm hoping to do 2 again, if not 3. That would be kind of cool. Hopefully, one of them is a Christmas song. I have now I have 2. I just wrote one this past December, but I should probably work on that one a little bit more. But I do have now 2 original written Christmas songs. Nice. So I definitely want to try and get those out this year, work on them a little bit and see. I definitely want to keep releasing music. That is my favorite thing to do, is putting out my original music on streaming for people to hear. And I always, every year, I try to play more shows than I did the year before. So this past year I did, I believe it was 114 gigs altogether. So my goal for 2026 is 115 or more. So far I'm at, I think, 7, because I just booked a couple for Nashville next week. Let me see. Wait, where is it?
Yeah. Feel free to say those dates too, just so people know where they could see you.
Yeah. I have 7 booked already. So I have January 14th, 10 to 2 a.m. at Bootleggers Inn, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. with the Haybirds. John Hibbard and the Haybirds. I have January 15th at 9 p.m. at Nashville Tour Stop at the Local. January 16th, 6 p.m. Nashville Tour Stop at Jackalope Brewing. And then at 9 p.m. on the 16th, I'm going to go over to the Greenlight Bar with Lyrics and Longnecks. And then I'll come back to New York, and I have 2 more up here in January. I have Quarry Creek Tap Room. It's my favorite winery on Long Island. I just love their wine so much. I drink a lot of wine in the summers because there's so many wineries. But yep. I'll be back at Quarry Creek Tap Room on January 24th from 1 to 5 p.m. And then the following weekend, I'll be at the Riverhead Cider House from 4 to 7 p.m. That's January 31st. The Riverhead Cider House, since we're talking about social media, if anyone out there is listening, check out their TikTok. They're hysterical. I love them.
Awesome. But Chloe, thanks for hopping on. Mm-hmm. Y'all make sure to definitely go check out his show. I did on accident at Dickman's, and it was great. So
it
I could
awesome.
Attest to it.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. But also, where people could find you, like on socials, website, anything like that, where could people find you?
Yes, my website is chloehalpin.com, and then all social medias are Chloe Halpin Music, and it's Chloe with a C, not a K. The K family has a lot of money, and again, I am not a trust fund baby. I wish I was, but it's Chloe Halpins, Halpin. And yeah, that's where you can find me, Chloe Halpin Music.
Right on. You guys make sure to do that. Also check out Ray's Rowdy and Rowdy Alternative. Google us, will pop up. So thanks for listening. Chloe, thank you again. This is
thank
a lot
you.
Of fun, and we'll see you guys next time. My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you and I take your friends, who's gonna take you home tonight?